Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with a three-timer, Lena Abisagawayan. And if you remember her, she's done a solo episode where she discussed the benefits of being multilingual and also some tips on how you can actually pick up new languages. She also did an intro podcast with us where she talked about her career, how she's awesome with languages, diplomacy, and martial arts. And now she's back on again because she's doing something exciting. She's in Brussels working with the European Parliament. And we're going to talk about the Parliament and how that affects the world from a policy standpoint. And basically, this is going to be a learning experience for me as well because I don't know a lot about the Parliament. Welcome to the show, Lena.
Thanks, Tayo. Good to be back.
Glad to have you back. Why don't you catch us up on what you've been? And last time we talked, I believe you were in college, and since then you've wrapped up your classes, right?
Well, I'm actually due to graduate in April, and I'm currently in Brussels in Belgium for my last semester interning at the European Parliament and traveling around in Europe, seeing a bunch of different countries, doing some exploring, and it's just a fantastic experience so far.
So what has been your favorite place to visit so far as you tour in Europe?
Oh, what a tough question. honestly, each place has its own type of charm. So
come on,
I don't really know if I can narrow it down. It's a really tough question to ask a global nomad. You know, we're comfortable just about anywhere.
Okay, fine. What has been can I ask the most beautiful place that you've seen, at least like the most, I don't know, maybe you saw a museum that you resonated with? Because I see your pictures on Facebook and I can't imagine that.
Of course, yes. Well, we walked up onto this tower in Ghent in Belgium, and it's just this really tall church tower overlooking the city. And it was really, it was very spiritual, honestly, to me, even though I'm not necessarily a spiritual person, but just the view, it just looked like something out of a storybook. Yeah. And it was amazing and fascinating, and it's just an honor to be here, honestly.
You know, I'll stay off the torturous questions, but let's talk about what you're doing over there now.
That's what I'm here for.
Let's talk about what you're doing there. What do you, you said you're interning with the European Parliament. What's your responsibility there?
So I'm currently working in the office of a member of Parliament of the Czech Republic, Mr. Miroslav Poche. And I ended up here completely randomly, just by chance. I didn't choose the office or anything like that. But I have been extremely, extremely lucky to end up here because Mr. Poche is he's very young. He's 36, I believe, maybe a little older, but definitely one of the youngest members of Parliament here. And he's on some of the most important committees, including the Foreign Relations Committee, the ITER Committee, which is Industry and Research, and also some really interesting delegations, like the China delegation and the Ukraine delegation, which are both very pertinent at the moment, obviously. And so I've been working in the office as a prepper and a briefer and a background researcher.
Wow.
And really just anything that comes up. The thing about Europe is, you know, back in my time in Congress, the offices were really huge. So the staff was up to 20 people. But here it's just four of us, including the member. So we really, you know, interns are not taken lightly. And we definitely get a lot of work done.
Yeah. No, I can't even imagine it, because some of the things we were talking about pre-show was like what the whole process is like. You know, what does the European Parliament do? You know, what's the legislative arm, and how does it affect the whole of European policies? And you know, to hear you say that in your office is only four people, that's a little surprising for me to hear.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot of responsibility for the people that are there. That's for sure.
Absolutely. So let's stay on that. What does the European Parliament do? What's the significance of the European Parliament?
So the European Parliament is, I guess, compared a lot of the time to Congress, because it is a type of lawmaking body. But it's actually pretty different from Congress in that it can't actually initiate the legislation. It just proposes amendments and votes on legislation, but it doesn't actually initiate it. That actually comes from a separate branch. So the Parliament is the representative body of the Parliament. Of the European kind of institutions, which means the elected representatives come from all 28 member countries, or I guess soon to be 27 member countries. So it's basically just the representative part of the democracy here in Europe.
And when you say here in Europe, you're talking, is that every single country in Europe, or are there some countries that have to apply for membership?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I mean, this is actually part of the European Union. So just the countries that are actually part of the European Union, part of the official Western European tradition, I guess. They are all represented here in Parliament. And there are many political groups. There are seven, actually, compared to the, you know, two political groups in the States. So it's a lot more chaotic and a lot more rowdy, but definitely, I think, a lot more interesting to work in, for sure.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking, because I know not every country, you know, countries still apply to be in the EU, but the European Parliament represents those countries in the EU, not necessarily the countries still applying to be in the EU.
Right, yes. So they would have to be full members.
Gotcha. You mentioned rowdy. I've watched a bit of those rowdiness play out on YouTube sometimes when interest in policies come into play, and I try to compare it to Congress here and you know, the House of Rep and Senate back home in Nigeria. And there's definitely more similarity with the Nigerian and the European Union versus the Americans. Americans seem to be a little bit more tamer sometimes. Why do you think it gets rowdy sometimes in the European Parliaments when they have interesting discussions?
Well, I think it's just the sheer numbers of people. You know, I mean, there are 100 members in the Senate, and there are 435 members, I believe, in the House. And here we have a whopping 736 members.
700.
So,
Sheesh.
You know, yeah. So it's I think it fluctuates based on different factors such as population and just seats that are available, but basically it's almost double the size of the entirety of Congress put together.
Wow.
So I mean, it's huge, and the fact that there are seven political groups instead of, you know, the usual two back in the States, and everything is conducted in all 23 official European languages. So adds another layer of complexity.
Where's the time to do all that?
Well, there are headphones, and you put in the headphones and you switch to your language of choice. So as you can imagine, I've had a lot of fun switching back and forth in different languages and listening to the different debates.
Wow, that's insane. You speak what, six languages, five to six languages? So you probably just go back and forth and just have fun.
That's sometimes what I do when I get off task. I switch back forth between the languages to see how much I can understand.
that's so fun. Another thing that happens sometimes is you know, we have world leaders visiting, and recently we had the darling of the world, apparently, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, visits the EU, and he was addressing you know, the EU, and he mentioned a statement that I found pretty profound. He said, the world benefits from a strong EU. I'm very curious to hear your opinion as you're working there right now. Do you agree with that sentiment or disagree?
Well, to be honest with you, I do see the value and I do agree in the power in numbers. And I think that having a larger conglomerate of countries definitely gives it more bargaining power. But it depends on what you mean by better, because one of the downsides of having such a grouping is the free rider issue, obviously, because, you know, some of the countries are smaller than others and some of the countries are larger. So there's always this sense that the smaller countries are kind of piggybacking off the benefits of the larger countries. And there's some stigma with that. And but I really do think that overall, each country really does have its very strong nationalistic voice. And I think that's very important. It's very powerful. And just being here, I can say that the EU as a whole, I frankly can't even imagine what Europe would be like without it. So if that says anything.
No, it does. But then, you know, you just said that, but there are some countries that do imagine that they can do well without the EU. And one of them, you just said, you know, 28, now soon to be 27, was, you know, Great Britain, and they had Brexit, right? But I guess for those that don't understand yet, you know, people hear Brexit all the time, but I don't know that everybody really understands the pros and cons. Why does England, or Great Britain rather, want to leave the EU?
Well, I think it's pretty complex, but just to generalize, I guess, similar to what I just said, the larger countries really do feel that they're being taken advantage of and that they're piggybacking. The smaller countries are piggybacking off of them. So in Britain's example, the more right-wing conservative movement basically brought up this issue that, you know, we think that Britain could negotiate and broker deals with other countries by itself and get the same, if not more, benefits and better deals. And so if that's the case, then why are we, you know, in this collective group where we're really doing a favor to some other countries with just having our name on the list next to theirs, and we're perfectly capable of just standing on our own? So that was the main question, and that was answered, I guess, by the British people in the referendum.
And it's funny, after the referendum, you see a lot of people that, you know, some of them didn't vote. They really do not like this because they feel like it's too isolationist. Yep. Isolationist in the world. I tend to agree with that mindset. Just, I think a lot more can be done. I see the benefit of the EU. I mean, even traveling there, you can see like the Schengen area where you can travel with one visa to many countries, and having to go through the complexities, and now, you know, banks relocating, and, you know, the anti-immigrant stance that it's implicitly saying. I'm very curious though, as you're there, what you think. Do you agree with the pro leave EU or the stay in EU stance?
Well, as I said, power in numbers is always a strong stance to take, but at the same time, it really depends whose perspective you're looking from, right? So from Great Britain's perspective, they've always been a major player in the EU, and they've really made a name for themselves on the world stage. You know, they're a known country, they're very much respected, and their system of governance is quite, you know, up to par, and everyone kind of models themselves after that type of government and Western government. And so for them, I understand where that idea came from. But as far as how the effects will pan out and whether that'll be worth it, I think it's just a fact of waiting and seeing, because this has never happened before. There have been countries that joined the EU, but this is the first time that Article 50 was triggered, and Article 50 allows for the withdrawal of a member. So it was there as a safeguard, but really, I mean, nobody was expecting to have to use that.
Nobody thought that at all, for sure. Okay, so let's talk about the parliament structure. You mentioned that there are certain seats given to certain countries. Which country has the most seats?
So Germany, of course, being, you know, a very large, very powerful player. And obviously, so the number of seats does matter, but I really feel that it's also by political party is really how it's seen here. Because by country, it's not always as important, interestingly enough.
Why is that? Wait, wow. So, how come?
So it's basically people really associate themselves with political parties. And, you know, even when we go to lunch here, when I'm introduced to people and I just assume, you know, they're Czech because, well, my office is Czech, and they're not. They're just from the same political party because they cohese over the same issues. They, you know, have the same stances. So obviously representatives of different countries do, you know, collaborate and talk to each other. But I think really the cohesion comes from political party, ironically.
So then when you say there are seven political parties, what do these parties represent? What are their policies? What are they normally known for?
So, I mean, I think it's very similar to the states, except maybe perhaps each one is a little more nuanced because there are so many of them. But, I mean, it's the same basic understanding. There are some more liberal parties. There are green parties. There are borderline fascist parties. It's really all over the spectrum. But just similar to the states, different political parties representing different sides of the spectrum, different interests, perhaps centered around a specific issue, like the Greens, you know, centered around green energy and energy issues. So it's really not quite a different system.
Yeah, and the reason I was asking is because, you know, the reason why I said EU and Nigeria or something that I resonate with a little bit is because we have multiple parties in Nigeria, and we have sometimes up to 10, depending on the election. And it's you never can tell. I can't really tell which is conservative or liberal just because each party is just structured, at least in Nigeria, is just for, like, is centered around that personality. But in Europe, it's a little different where, like you said, there's a conservative, and then there's moderate conservative, and then there's, like, not as moderate conservative, and then there's a liberal, and the same thing. And then
Right, exactly. And, I mean, I could go in depth about each political party, but I just don't think that's very relevant. The main gist of it is that...
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Political parties really cohese together. And I think it's beautiful that, you know, they're all different nationalities, they're all different countries, but they have same political views, and that's what brings them together.
Okay. So as far as the parliament structure is set up, how does that compare with the American Congress?
So again, the U.S. has two chambers, and the MEP is just one chamber. MEPs all sit. Members of European Parliament are called MEPs. Sorry for the jargon there. But yeah, it's just one huge conglomerate. It's not divided up in any way besides political parties. I guess that's the largest difference of structure.
No, I mean, yeah, it's the two party, the larger, and then there's the size, obviously, as well as the just the sheer, you don't translate 28 different languages when you're on the floor there. But okay, and I think everything's done conducted in English here, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is. And yeah. I mean, here the official languages are English and French, but they're officially conducted in 23 different languages. It's very similar to the UN, actually. Back when I was in the UN, very similar vibe, translators sitting all around the room in a circle, and you have the little headset, put on the headset, tune into your language of choice, and then everyone's included.
All right, bam. Well, allow me to share this this opportunity with the listeners, if you will, Lena. So I know that you travel a lot, Lena, so you might be interested in having a luggage of choice. So Away, the guys at Away are very, very gracious and helpful to the Estol by Nomads audience, because they've agreed to actually give $20 off a suitcase. And the reason why Away is different is because it's not only a carry-on, but it's one that allows you to charge your phone. You know, it comes in medium, large, and extended stay sizes. And, the interior has a compression system that allows people like myself, who are overpackers, to have that smooth ride and not worry about forgetting every other thing or leaving something behind. And it's a 100-day free trial if you're not interested in it. But if you want to see if you vibe with it and you can travel with it, or if it's something worthy of your Instagram pages, you should check it out. And it's awaytravel.com/nomads for Stole by Nomads listeners. And once again, the promo code is nomads, and the URL is www.awaytravel.com/nomads. Welcome back, Lena. So the interesting thing that I've heard from you, basically what the difference is that it's a multi-party system. There's different languages. Every country representing the EU is also represented, represented in the parliament. You also talked about the legislative arm, about the European Parliament. Are there other branches? How do the other branches work? The executive and the judiciary. How do those work?
Sure. So, I mean, it's not very similar in that sense in the executive and judiciary. Those are separate entities from the parliament. They obviously they do interact, but they don't have very much to do with each other. Mm. The other two main legislative bodies, however, are the European Commission, which is actually has the power that our Congress has to actually put forward laws, draft laws, and put them forward and up for vote by Parliament. So the Commission is definitely the other big one. And then there's also the European Council, which is not by representative per se, but by country. So each country is represented under their country name, so to speak. We don't really call it by individual name, individual politicians, as you would in Parliament. So those three legislative bodies kind of work together to draft laws and edit laws and pass laws, and they all have different roles in that.
Oh, no, and that's fascinating. And have there been any major rules besides, I know currency is the only thing. I mean, the only thing I can think of recently was when people voted on whether they were going to use euros, right? But are there other types of things that do get voted on that affect significantly how you move?
Well, really, course, a lot of things. Just laws that are supposed to be enforced by all member states are passed here. Mm-hmm. So obviously, different laws affect different countries differently. So that's important to understand, because one law that may not have much of an effect on a very large country would have a significant impact on a country that's perhaps smaller or depends on that particular sector, if it's a tariff or a tax, especially. So, yeah, of course, the voting that happens here affects things that happen around the world every day. And it's definitely something that is seen and felt and very much a part of the city.
And to stay on that, there's an interesting, we've seen the recent refugee crisis is happening in Syria and other countries of the like that have experienced similar things where refugees are leaving the countries. Does that also get voted on, like which country accepts what, or is that an individual thing?
Well, there is legislation that in terms of just the general regulation of borders, of course, immigration, migration, things like that, yes, that are enforceable across the EU. Of course, single states can pass their own legislation, but they always do have to retain a certain standard that allows them to, remain an EU country and kind of represent what that represents as a whole. So it's kind of a tricky line to balance, right? Because each country is sovereign and technically has its own rights to pass laws and govern its people. But at the same time, it's part of a bigger picture. It's part of a bigger jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
So it's all about straddling that line.
Yeah. And another thing that I will add, and you feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe the EU has a unified military as the Congress does, as America does.
No.
So, okay. So there's no unified military arm. And each nation has its own constitution still, but there's sort of that independence. I mean, I've got to say, I don't know, Lena, and listen to you, I like the parliamentary system because of the multiple party and changing coalitions, but the only reason that I'm even saying that is because I think it makes for a more diverse debate on issues.
I agree, definitely. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just fascinating. I guess because another thing is in the States, you know, being from different states is not that big of a deal. I mean, I know that different parts of our country have different specific cultural aspects that come with them, of course. But these are actual different countries, you know, and just seeing that cultural vibe and different people of different cultures speaking different languages with different interests. And it's just so eccentric. Really?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And for those listening, if you're thinking of going to Europe, the reason why a lot of people can say, oh, I'm just taking a bus, I'm going to France, and I'll be back in Germany, and I'll go, like, you know, that is because it almost seems like there's no, maybe I'm wrong again, there's no fixed border within, there's a Schengen zone.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, I was in a bus the other day, and I honestly, I did not know which country I was in. I was just going from country to country, and suddenly I was in Germany, and then I was in France. And my phone tells me, you know, when I get into a new country and that I have coverage there. So every 2 minutes it was like, oh, welcome to Germany. And then 15 minutes later, it was like, welcome to France. And then another half hour later, it was welcome to Strasbourg. So, yeah.
It's really something else. That's fascinating to me. And you know, the reason why, you know, when you approached me about this topic and I was talking about it, I think it's so necessary just because as we become this more digitalized and flatter world, I think it's important that we understand the countries that we interact with on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram, and see what it is that makes their day-to-day. So, you know, obviously grateful to you for coming on to explain this. I'm going to try and do a summary to see if I actually got everything you said. So I don't know if I'm going to get an A in this test, Lena, but we'll see.
All right, well, let's see. Yep, let's give it a shot.
Okay, so there are 28 member nations and about to be 27. Is that
right?
Correct? I think there are at least 23 different languages spoken in this.
23, that's correct. Officially, yes.
Okay. Cool. And then one of the biggest differences is that, you know, with the EU, there's multiple parties, and the United States Congress is dual. It's dual. There's one army that represents the U.S., and that's not the case in the EU, but then the European Parliament has the ability to do some legislative stuff, but they can like start it. Is that correct? They can't.
Well, the European Parliament doesn't initiate legislation. That's just a different body called the European Commission.
Yeah,
right. That initiates the legislation, makes the initial draft, and sends it out. Right, but the European Parliament does vote on it.
Yeah.
So. They do have that ability.
They have that ability. And then obviously, oh, yeah, there's no executive. Is there an executive branch? That's a different thing. I forgot to ask about that.
That's separate. That's not where I'm working specifically. Yeah. It's not really an executive branch in the way that we see it, like a president, because each kind of entity has its own president. You know, that's a joke. That's a running joke in Europe that there are so many presidents, no one can keep track because there's a president of the parliament, there's a president of the commission, there's a president of the council, and then there are even more vice presidents.
Oh my goodness.
So, goodness, yes. So, in that sense, it's just everybody has its own president.
Yeah, well, there you go. And for lesser differences, I know Europe uses the metric system, and, you know, other things of less importance are like there's no national sports team or widely observed national holiday within the European Parliament. But yeah, I think that's kind of what I got. You know, there are obviously important legislations like taxation and immigration and other things like that affect how you move and affect how expensive things are. And the impact of what's going to happen with Brexit is something that none of us can actually talk
to. We shall see.
Exactly. None of us can actually talk to now, but there are certain, you know, some people are really happy and some people are very worried. And some don't know.
Definitely. And I mean, the people here that are representing the UK or, for example, the judges that sit the European Court of Justice, you know, they're losing their seats, not because of anything they did, but just because, you know, their country is no longer part of the union. So it's a shame for them, really. I mean, I can't imagine being in that position.
Yeah, no, I can imagine it. I can imagine it all. But Oh, yeah. So there you go. The education of the European Parliament and some of the European Union by Lena Biskupwine. Thank you so much. But before you go, I want to know, what's next? What are you doing in Europe? What's going on? What's the fun thing that you want to explore that you haven't explored? And when are you coming back?
Well, I'm actually still in Europe for at least another 3 to 4 months, traveling around. Going to go to The Hague in the Netherlands next week, and going to Prague on a business trip with my group to go do some, hopefully, some local meetings with the mayor and people that are actually constituents, because, you know, these people are voted by their local, you know, population. So it's important to address them and stay in touch with them. So that's going to be really interesting, actually, just kind of seeing the local aspect of what the members of parliament go through back home and how their constituent base is, you know, sees them and interacts with them. So that's going to be a whole new world.
And what's going to be happening with Policy Pair? Would you be writing stuff? Are you going to write a journal, share? Where can people find out stuff about you?
Yes, absolutely. I have been keeping a journal, religiously been keeping a journal, just so I can keep track of everything that's been going on. And thankfully, I have my wonderful, wonderful interns that really, really help me stay on track and write articles and publish things and get in touch with new writers. So I'm really hoping to keep that up. And obviously, we'll see what happens. It's great to be able to do everything online nowadays. So that should be helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Good. I was on it the day before Valentine's Day, yeah, which is the 13th. Why am I being so complicated? I was on it on the 13th, and I saw a great article on Boko Haram. And for those that don't know what Boko Haram is, it's a militant Islamist group in Nigeria that, you know, sort of sometimes sparks up issues in Nigeria. So I was really reading that with intense scrutiny, because I'm always paying attention to anything that has to do with the insurgency in northeastern Nigeria. So
of course,
definitely,
yeah. So our newest intern is from Nigeria, actually. I had a chance to talk to him, and he wrote this article, and it was very insightful. He's written for a bunch of local Nigerian newspapers, so it was really interesting to have his perspective in a way that wasn't as generalized as a lot of the news that we get about Nigeria is, because I think it's lumped so much with just ISIS and that entire, which it, of course, it does have a piece from that. But I think it's an individual, and also it's becoming more of like a very nationalist type of movement, or at least it's portrayed that way. And so just speaking to him and having his article on my website, it's been really enlightening.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I will encourage listeners to visit, you know, policypair.com, because it's not just about, you know, one country. It sort of looks at the world from the global point of view that we all should, and it breaks down different policies and how and who the players are. And that's one of my favorite things that I go on there. So, but there you go. Lena Biskupwine spending some time with us as she's in Europe, interning at the European Parliament, breaking down what the Parliament is and how it affects the global world, but also keeping her full-time job of Policy Pair and just being a boss. So,
thank you so much for having me, Tayo.
Pleasure.
Keep in touch, and hopefully talk again soon on air.
I have a feeling that's going to happen. I don't know. It might just be a 3-person podcast, but I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
Thank you so much, Leah.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.